Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another Dorky Mets podcast. Today we have a special guest with us. We have Mr. Jem, the face of the Mets Junkies podcast. Well, the voice, I should say, because it's a podcast.
I would hate to be the face. I would hate to be the face of the podcast.
Yeah,
I
well.
have a def I have a decent voice.
Oh, you have a great voice
Face,
for podcasting.
thank you, but like face, come on, like back in the day, there was that old joke. He has a look for radio. Well, today it's he got that look for a podcast, and your boy Jem has exactly that.
Don't talk like that. You're the one who spends the most selfies out of all of us.
Yeah,
That
so
is true. That is true.
for those who don't know, by now we're writers at MetsJunkies.com. So today I want to ask, because I want to do this thing where every show we have to ask each other some opening questions. So what's your favorite baseball movie? That's what we're gonna leave it at today. Corne, what? I'm curious what you got for your favorite baseball movie.
My favorite baseball movie is For the Love of the Game
Ooh.
with Billy Chappell, I guess.
Yeah.
But I have to explain to all of our listeners, baseball movies is not a big thing over here. There are not many baseball movies on the TV. So it's actually, I think at most I have watched like three baseball movies, and that's one of the three.
Which are the
So
other two?
One was Sugar. It's about a Dominican kid. I liked it a lot. And the third one, I can't even remember what the name was, but
Field of Dreams?
no, never watched Field of Dreams. Never watched.
What? Oh my God, that is like the baseball movie to watch. Well, before I go forward, Jem, what's your favorite movie?
For me, I would have, man. I think people are going to get mad at me, but I would have to say Moneyball. I loved
Oh,
Moneyball.
I did watch
well,
Moneyball too. I think that's a good one.
okay.
I like that one better than For the Love of the Game. So good one,
Okay.
man. Tim.
Yeah, well, why would people
Thank
be
you.
mad at you? That's a great selection, I think.
I don't know. I think Met fans in particular have a grudge against the whole Moneyball theme. So I think they just don't like the idea.
Okay, well,
We're the Dorky
let's.
Mets show, so
Yeah,
we
we
like
love the Moneyball.
it.
So, my favorite movie. See, I thought one of you guys would say Field of Dreams, so I was preparing to talk about a different baseball movie, but I'm just gonna go and say it out there because I think it's a classic. The Field of Dreams, Corne. That is one of the best. I mean, just be careful because towards the end of the movie, you're gonna have a tear in your eye. Just giving you a heads up. But it's a really good movie. Another, the one that I was prepared to talk about though was The Rookie, and it's the story of Jim Morris, right? And it's a cool movie because it's based on a true story. He's like this 35-year-old prospect, basically, because he promised his team his he was a coach in I believe college or high
High
school.
school, I think.
High school, right? So he promised his team if they win the finals, then he's going to try out for a baseball team, and they won. So he kept his word, and he ended up, pitching in the major leagues for like two seasons, not too many appearances, but it's a great story.
And I believe that was played by Dennis Quaid. He did a great job in that movie.
Believe so. Yeah. So check that out when you get a chance, Corne.
Well, we will see. We will see. I don't know where I can find them, but who knows if I'm not really that into baseball
We
or
might.
sports movies, so
Well, either
maybe.
way, we might be able to get you over a couple copies. I'm sure we'll be able
Yeah.
to find a way.
There you go. Anybody wants to send Corne some movies or suggestions, by all means on Twitter, you can write to us, let us know what your favorite movies are. But we have a podcast to go through.
Yes.
Right. And today we actually have ourselves an interesting one, I think, because our last dorky show, we talked about hitting stats. This next stat we're going to talk about, run value, is more diverse, right? Because we can use it to weigh a pitcher's pitches and a hitter's ability, right? So I'm going to let my dude Cornet give you, you know, an explanation on run value. So by all means, take over, sir.
Well, first of all, I want to mention, if you talk about run value, is a type of stat that you can look up the success of a certain pitch. So for pitchers, it's the success of a pitch they throw, and for hitters, it's the success of the pitch they see, this, how they do damage against a certain pitch. So honestly, run value is what most is preferred for pitchers to use, because if you look at run value for batters, you can adjust your pitch uses against a certain hitter. But first, I want to go through a couple of pitchers. Important thing to note is that run value for pitchers, it's the minus, so the less runs, the better. So minus below zero is good for pitchers, and above zero is good for hitters. So I was looking at an interesting case in how you can use run value to your advantage, and that was Matt Whistler. And Matt Whistler went more as a reliever, became more of a reliever in 2017, using his sinker 41.3% of the time. And he had a 10-plus run value, so that's pretty bad, on his sinker. And he went from 2017 to 2020, and he completely ditched his sinker and went to his slider. And you can see how they did that, and I think it's really interesting. 2018, it was 21%, 7 run value. 2019, on the sinker, by the way. 2019, 20%, 11 run value. And 2020, he just completely ditched it. And in that same amount of time, he threw his slider way more. 2017, he threw it just 37% of the time, and he had a 3 run value. 2018, he had a 47%, he pitched 47% the slider, and he had a minus 2. And then to 2019, he went it all the way up to 70% and had minus 8 run value. And 2020 is 83.4%, and he had a minus 10 value. So for me, it's interesting to look at Matt Whistler and say the more he used his slider, the better. And after he probably threw his sinker for his full career, they looked at it and they thought, well, nothing is working. 41% isn't working. 20% isn't working. Let's completely dish it. And he has been pretty darn good over the last couple of years using that slider predominantly. So that was an interesting case.
I don't know if you want to
step in.
My bad, yeah, thank you.
No, go ahead. No, I move on, I thought maybe give you an opportunity to respond on it.
No, I was going to say, I guess a similar player to that in the Mets rotation could be someone by the likes of Marcus Stroman. I'm looking at his run value in 2019 on his slider. And I don't know if this is the scale that it's looked at, if you're looking at the RV per 100 or just the run value altogether, but he has a negative 22 on that slider. So it looks like that he has found quite a bit of success on that pitch.
Yeah. That slider of Mark Stroman is really good. And you can see what works. I mean, it could be the case that because you know, some pitchers just can't just throw sliders to be effective. Matt Whistler obviously made that happen, but that's not for everybody. So maybe his pitch uses that he that Stroman throws the other pitches makes his slider so good. So, but you can figure it out a bit. And I looked at another Mets pitcher who to me is pretty interesting in one value case, and that's newly met Taiwan Walker, who doesn't, if you look at his percentile numbers, his spin rates on his fastball, his hard hit rates on, his velocity on his fastball, doesn't wow anybody. But over, but since 2017, he had a minus 18 run value on his four-seamer. And that when also using his four-seamer more, he was better. And he also used a cutter. But if he, in 2020, he used his cutter again a little bit more than he did in his previous seasons. And his run value on his cutter was plus two. So, I mean, if I look at that from, hey, 2017, he didn't really, this was final, I would say final full season. Mm-hmm. He didn't use his cutter a lot, and his fastball actually had a better run value. So why go on with using the cutter more? So I'm very curious how Hefner and the Mets are looking at that with Walker, if they maybe, well, maybe not going to use his cutter a lot in this season.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because, I mean, one of the things that I look at, you know, when we're looking at run value, it's you can't just, for me, you can't just really focus on what the negative is. There's more factors to it, right? So if you look at Baseball Savant, there's also like the hard hit percentage per pitch. So you can also weigh that in when you're thinking about this. It's like, I'm looking at Walker right now, right? And, you know, he seems to make a lot of, you know, soft contact when he's throwing his sinker, right? He's got a negative two. And, you know, I'm just comparing it to other uses. And it seems like he used more of an arsenal last year. He's mixing things up a lot more. So that's interesting to see.
It's interesting to see moving forward if they keep doing that way besides his cutter not adding any run value. It's working against him. So that to me, that's an interesting case.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, got to mix up the pitches too because just because a guy's got like a negative 10 run value on a four-seamer, for instance, a fastball, right, that, you know, the hitters are going to be expecting that that pitch if he's using it over, you know, 60% of the time. So it's an effective pitch, but at the same time, you got to have some kind of mix in there to really get the hitters thinking and be more effective for your pitches, I think.
And I do like that about Baseball Savant because it does show you right next to the run value how many pitches they've thrown. And going back to Marcus Stroman, you know, that negative 22 on his slider, it's his second pitch's most thrown. So it's, for me, I like to see that it's not his most thrown pitch, you know, but it may be that go-to pitch with two strikes, which obviously with Stroman, that nasty slider it is.
Yeah, I think that's right. Like I mentioned, he probably uses that slider more as a weapon off that fastball. So they clearly need it together to be good,
right?
Instead of, but yeah, you can still maybe, you know, try it out being a more slider pitcher for Marcus Stroman and see if that makes it better. If you look at his run value numbers, because we might not look into that full potential of that slider yet. Maybe that's the full potential, but you can figure that out if you need to, like with Whistler.
Yeah, that is definitely true. And I'm looking at, you know, he doesn't really get too much whiffs, but. Excuse me, I'm referring to Walker here. He doesn't, you know, get that much whiffs on his pitches, but I do like his run value. And I also want to mention that I sorted out the leaderboards of the run values. And, you know, you got to think it's put into consideration. Guys like Denzelson Lamont from the Padres last year, he was very successful. And part of that is because that slider of his has a negative 19 run value. Mm-hmm. Devin Williams, who won Rookie of the Year, his changeup was in third place for negative 13 run value. So it's a – the airbender, yes. there's different
– that thing is nasty. The airbender.
It is. It's damn. Yeah, definitely. He won the Rookie of the Year, so there's definitely a lot to consider. Now, are we done talking about pitching? Because I want to get more into the hitters side of this run value. If you're ready to move on.
Yeah, I'm ready to move on.
Shall
I go?
Jem, did you have anything, Jem, before we move on?
No, I think we're ready to go on.
All right, let's do it. Let's hear it.
Well, like I mentioned in the beginning, for hitters, it's working the other way. So if you have a positive, so a plus run value, that's good. And I looked at Brandon Nimmo as an example because I found something pretty interesting. And Brandon Nimmo is rakes against four-seam fastballs. He had 10 run value in 18, 9 run value in 19, and a 7 run value in 20. But what to me is pretty interesting is that pitchers still threw the fastball to Brandon Nimmo, 43% in 2020, which was 17th highest for all major leaguers. And there was only one hitter who had a higher run value on the fourth seamer and got a higher percentage of fastballs, and that was Brandon Belt. And many of the top 20 in that list had a negative run value on fastballs. So that for me shows that this for hitters, it's actually a bad thing that we can see this on Baseball Savant, because maybe now pitchers think, hey, wait a second, we keep throwing Brandon Nimmo fastballs. Maybe that's not smart. Maybe we have to throw a little bit more breaking balls and our speed pitch to this guy. Because, you know, him being so good and still 17th highest in fastball percentage, that made me scratch my head a little bit. So to me, that was fun to watch and fun to look at and fun to use run value as, and fun to maybe look and notice if pitchers make that adjustment to Brandon Nimmo.
What's interesting is it seems like that Nimmo tends to strike out most on the fastball. Does it show like his whiff percentage on the fastball?
Well, it doesn't show on run value, but it just shows that what the damage he does. Mm-hmm. So maybe he whiffs more on the fastball, but you take the whiffs with the damage he's done every time. So, to me, it's pretty interesting. But that can be the perception of a pitcher from, hey, he was late on that ball, I can do it again.
Well, I think that's – and then I do think that's maybe why the pitcher does take that approach, is maybe that they just – they feel that he does strike out and make less contact, more on the fastball. But at the same time, you're making an excellent point, right? Like it's all there in the writing.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, looking at his whiff value in fastball, let me see. We have 22%. He has a 22% whiff with the four seamer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's not bad at all. It's not like my boy Pete Alonso here, who with the slider, and he saw 151 sliders, and he whiffed out 44.7% of the time. So it seems like that's probably an Achilles heel that maybe other pitchers are exploiting.
Let me see what other ones. To bring this up. I mean, a fastball and slider are two different pitches. So I would expect a higher whiff rate on a slider no matter what.
Yeah, I was just looking at the highest whiff percentage in the baseball. I mean, excuse me, in the Mets team, and it was Pete Alonso against the slider. It was the highest, and the curveball as well. He also had a little bit of difficulty with that. So it seems like, you know, the breaking pitches he still needs to work on. But he was very aggressive last season, so hopefully he'll be more patient and stop swinging like a madman.
And just as we speak about Pete Alonso, I would love to throw in just a shameless plug real quick. Sean Connor Flannery wrote an amazing piece about Pete Alonso's quote unquote sophomore slump. So if people have the time to check that out, that would be great.
Yeah, definitely. I haven't checked it out yet, but I'm looking forward to that because, you know, Pete's my dude.
And Sean is an amazing writer.
Yes, he is. Yeah, very detailed.
Yeah, he goes really into it.
Yeah, yes, he does.
Now, you know who did have success against non-fastball for the Mets? Michael Conforto against sinkers. I mean, I guess it's considered two-seamer, but let's go. McNeil with the changeup is actually the best one there. He had a 5-run value, so
out of figures. That's the type of hitter McNeil is.
Yeah.
If I had to pick someone who would be good against non-fastballs, it would be McNeil.
Right.
Yeah. Conforto also had a 5 for changeups.
Can I backtrack
and curveballs?
Can I backtrack for a second?
Sure, man.
To Corne, would you say that's why he probably doesn't have a high hard hit percentage as far as McNeil?
Well,
is because he's getting more hits off of the changeup.
Yeah, I wrote an article not long ago about McNeil's hitting ability, and it shows that what McNeil isn't barreling up is the balls that often. He's just putting it in play where fielders aren't there. And I wrote an article where when they didn't shift him in 2019, he hit for more power. And then in 2020, they shifted him again more. So his power dropped. And to me, that shows that he tried to use more of off-field hitting again. And that's his game, and that works. And it's a bit of old school, a bit of Keith Hernandez game. But it works for him. So
We spoke about this in a second episode, I believe, where we talked about barrel rates.
Yeah.
So if you want to, you know, listen more depth about that, we can go to that episode. I just don't want, you know, go over the same thing we went to in depth. But yeah, that's basically the McNeil conundrum, is what I think what you called it, Corne.
Yeah.
Just like.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, run value is definitely a good tool for you to gauge the hitters and pitchers, how they succeed against certain pitches or use of pitches. And do we have anything else to add before we move on to some more exciting stuff?
No, I said what I want to say.
There you go. How about you, Jim? You have anything you want to throw in there, a little dash or something? All right. Well, today was the Mets' first spring training game, right? And I tried to watch it on the Marlins website that they had, but it was like a weird angle. Like I was not enjoying it. I could not see too much of the game. So I listened to it on the MLB at bat. You know, it's one of the Marlins stations. It was spring training. There's a lot of guys out there who, you know, a lot of pitching that the Mets, I guess, are trying to get out there. We had, was it Harold Gonzalez was starting it, and Overall, I think the pitching was pretty good. I really liked what Sapucki did. Sean Rifoli.
Mm-hmm.
The hitting, you know, it Mets got, was it five hits? They didn't score a run. They lost 2-0 at Aguilar hit a 2-run bomb right before who was it that hit that triple? Was it Marte? Starlin Marte, I believe, hit a triple.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And that was basically all the offense that we saw.
Yeah, I mean,
well, that so, we listened
right,
to.
Yeah, yeah, that we listened to. Listen, the offense was lacking for the Mets, but it's not like it exactly was popping for the Marlins over there either, right? It's the first day of spring training. It is what it is. It was just great to see these guys out on the field.
Yeah, well right now I'm more curious to see how, you know, each individual person is doing. I'm not looking at it as a collective thing because, you know, we have lots of changes. So you have a guy who pitched one inning, you'll have a guy only get 2 or 3 at bats. And it's more just to see where the individual players are at. So was there anybody that you guys want to talk about from today's game?
Go on, Corner.
Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, I'll go. Oh. So I thought it was interesting how Trevor Hildenberger was able to get himself into a jam in the sixth inning and get himself out that jam. It looked like that the Marlins would tack on another insurance run and make it harder for the Mets to come back in that following top of the seventh inning, which they didn't anyway. However, it looked like the Marlins were getting ready to tack on some insurance. And Trevor Hildenberger was able to finesse his way out of there. And I think that's something – I think that's a positive to see as far as maturity-wise, as far as is this a guy that we might call up in the near future. I think he showed Luis Rojas something, and I thought I really liked it.
Yeah, just to clarify a little bit, his stat line for that one inning that he pitched, I believe it was the sixth inning, he gave up 1 hit, 2 walks, and struck out 3 batters. So that was all on him that inning. And, you know, like you said, he did get himself out of that pickle that he got himself into.
And we all
and how about you?
It, right?
Oh, Corny, I know you got something to say.
I said we all love side armors, right?
So, yes.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of a less positive note, and that's the guy who allowed the triple and allowed the homer in Riley Gilliam. The Mets drafted him in the fifth round because in 2018 because they saw him as a big riser in the system as a reliever, and since then he has had amazing strikeout stuff, but also walks a lot of guys. And to me, it was a bad sign to see him get behind 3-0 and allow the triple, and then followed with a 3-1 count where the home run came from. I'm a little bit worried about the walks for Gilliam, especially when hitters are being more patient and spitting on that, you know, that curve in the dirt. I had high hopes for him. And for me, it's a bit of a spring training for him where he has to show what he's capable of and getting major league hitters out, because maybe he will lose track of a future bullpen spot. And I think a fifth round pick getting picked as a reliever, I hope that it works out, because that was a risky pick. And
yeah, but to that note, Corne, they did rush him, you know, through advanced hitting very quickly. So maybe it's all about an experience issue with him, because he seemed like he dominated in 2018 in short A, but you know, once he got to triple A, he got, or even double A, his numbers started to look a little bit bad. You know, in double A he had a 4.34, and then he got promoted to triple A the same year with a 13.5. Yeah. So I hope you're right. You know, for a fifth pick, you expect a little bit more, especially as a reliever.
Yeah, exactly. And it was the plan to move him up fairly quick. And with the last with a last 2020 season, yeah, I would really, really like to see him getting out of the box fast this spring. And for me, yeah, it was one of the arms that I really looked forward to. I'm a little bit disappointed with this.
While I personally did like that he was able to get himself out the inning just like Hildenberger, I do tend to agree with Corne over here, and I wonder if Corne thinks that if he could almost be in a position where Chasen Bradford and Rob Whalen aren't right now, soon.
Well,
can you elaborate on that?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Can you elaborate more on that?
Were in the Mets system and they were relievers, and they seemed like that they could have a spot in a major league bullpen. But these guys are kind of, you know, and not kind of, they're struggling to find jobs right now just because they don't have the blow by you fastballs. You know, if you follow Chasen Bradford on Twitter, he's kind of vocal about this stuff, which I do like to see. But you know, he doesn't have the blow by you stuff, but his numbers are pretty good. And I wonder if Riley Gilliam is on the cusp of putting himself in that position due to the amount of relievers the Mets have, the amount of relievers that are going to hit free agency, the lack of experience he has in the upper levels. It's going to be interesting. I wonder what Corne thinks on that.
Well, for the Mets, I agree. I think the Mets added so much depth in relief pitching that he became a bit of an afterthought, while in recent years he was mentioned as one of the guys who, like I mentioned, went right through the minors and then be a solid part of the bullpen. But we also have a guy like Drew Smith, who is in bit in that same fold right now. You know, a homegrown bullpen talent that just hasn't really gotten their opportunity. And Drew Smith is a guy who actually pitched pretty decent. Right.
I would think Drew Smith is a little bit ahead of him on the depth chart, if I'm not mistaken.
No doubt. But it's a bit of the same.
I think, you know, it's still a little too early to go out there, because, I mean, considering he's only got 2 years under his wings, like only 56 innings, and we haven't really seen him pitch, you know, in a regular season, or if he's able to get there. But you do have to question, you know, Jem, like you said, there are all these other guys that have had the same kind of that track record of just falling off. Let's see what happens there. But you know what I am excited about?
Watching baseball excited about in a normal feed tomorrow.
Yeah, with Yamamoto gonna start. I'm really excited about seeing Yamamoto.
Yeah, me too. And our friend Sam McWilliams. I'm really excited to see McWilliams.
You beat me to it. I was just going to ask Jem how he felt, since he had the pleasure of having an interview with McWilliams. How does it feel to you know, actually watch him put on the blue and orange and pitch for us? You know, being that you spoke to the guy.
It's going to be – anytime you get a chance to talk to any of these players and build just a tiny relationship – and then you get to see him go out on the field, you're going to root for that guy. I am completely rooting for Sam McWilliams. I hope at some point there'll be a reason for me to give him like a congratulation text during the spring, maybe during spring training, or hopefully at some point during the season.
Yeah, definitely. And
that will be cool.
Go ahead, Corne.
Oh, I just said that would be cool.
Yeah, but what do you think about seeing – who are you excited to see tomorrow, Corne? looking forward to pitching?
Well, mostly Sam McWilliams, but we mentioned it.
Yeah. Well, I think we all want to see what the Mets seen in him, right? And I think he's also I think there was some recent news about him doing well with the you know, stretches and all that stuff. So
yeah,
didn't
he also throw harder now?
What's that?
Didn't he also add a little bit of velocity now, or was that someone else? Might
Well, Zapagi did add some velo.
Yeah, he had that was a big thing, by the way, from this this day, that Zapagi regained his fastball velocity, which he lost in the interstructural league. So that was huge, by the way.
Yeah, definitely.
That was quite a jump too.
So yeah, went up by like was it? He started throwing like 94, 95. Is that correct?
Yeah, it topped out at 95, but he was in the instructional league, and he was around 88, yeah, 89.
That's so. a six, seven mile power difference. Yeah. That's quite a disparity. That's a good job by Zapucky.
Definitely.
Right, yeah. And, you know, Jem, it's like this guy is a guy who has a history of injuries, and, you know, you want to see him succeed, especially being that, you know, he's been in the farm system for a little bit longer than most of our exciting guys, and there was a point where, like, he had, like, the breakout potential, but he kind of just got lost in the mix because of his injuries. So I definitely want to see Zapucky succeed. You know, maybe he could be a big lefty for us in the bullpen.
I don't know if you guys remember, but jokingly in the group chat, it may have been about a month ago, we were talking about Matthew Allen, JT Ginn, as well as Zapucky, and I was saying that, you know, you had mentioned that Matthew Allen has that he reminds you of Matt Harvey, right? So something about JT Ginn kind of reminds me of Zach Wheeler, and I had jokingly said that Allen and Ginn would be better versions of Harvey and Wheeler. And then you threw out Zapucky question mark, and I threw out Matt's. So hopefully that's not the case. Matt's wasn't terrible. He didn't have a terrible career, but hopefully, at least like injury wise, he's able to keep a clean slate.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see what happens. Corner, you want to talk about any spring training news or anything? Spring training news?
No, we talked about the game. Go ahead.
Cornyn and I was going to ask you, is there a pitcher that you're excited to see tomorrow? No, I'm just joking, Cornyn.
That's a good question. How about Sam McWilliams? We haven't talked about Sam McWilliams yet. Just messing with you, Dan. Well, you're doing a great job.
Nope. It's fine. I was just, you know, wondering if you want to talk about anybody else. So one of the guys I want to talk about is, you know, I want to see Walker, who got the number 99 special from Turk Wendell, which is exciting. And Jem, you know that Corny doesn't really know much about the Wendell saga, the rituals and all the all the goofy stuff. And I know you've been watching the Mets for a while, so I thought it was pretty neat that, you know, Turk Wendell gave him the blessing to wear 99, so to speak, and gave him a care package, which included some black Swizzlers, I think, the licorice, a toothbrush, and the famous shark necklace. And what are your thoughts about that?
I'm gonna almost start off with the question. So by no means is Turk Wendell a Hall of Fame reliever, right? It's not like Taiwan Walker at all needed to get Wendell's permission. But, Dell, do you feel that Walker should have gotten Wendell's permission or needed Wendell's permission? My answer?
No, I don't think he needed the permission.
Because my answer from being such a fan of that era is yes. It's so ridiculous.
No, I think he needs the blessing, not the permission, but like the blessing. Like you need some kind of seal of approval from him, you know? And it's a like a mutual respect kind of thing, because as for us fans, Wendell was
Huge
a
deal.
big deal.
Will we see him circle the mound and just zero in and spike down that rosin bag? That would be cool, you know, once in a while.
Yeah, well, I'd like to see him, you know, kind of maybe rock the necklace while he's warming up or something, or before the games. Or that'd be cool to watch. I'm just really excited about this team. There's like so much. And then like there's news about like extending. They want to talk to Lindor before opening day deadline to extend him, which, you know, that's a big news, because the Mets, that's their main focal point, I think, at this point, because you gave up two guys that are, you know, pretty, you know, they're not great, but they're decent MLB pieces.
Sure.
For him. So.
And
yeah, let's see. It's really exciting. I'm glad that baseball's back.
Conforto even mentioned, I think, a few days ago, if not maybe even less, he said that he'd be lying if it wasn't on his mind in regards to the contract extension. So, you know, as much as some of these guys do say that they aren't, think about it, maybe they do, and maybe it's something that with both Francisco Lindor and Michael Conforto, maybe there's a way they could nip it in the bud before the season. I don't know. I just think that's unlikely, but it would be great to see.
Yeah, Corin, I got to ask you, who would you – I mean, let's just assume you only can extend two out of, let's say, the four, right? The four being Thor, Stroman, Lindor, and Conforto. Which of the two do you think are the biggest priority for the Mets right now to extend?
Ooh, that you make it – that's a hard question, man.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Lindor. So I guess which of the other three would you –
No, I think let's extend. I'm on the fence. I think it would be good to have. I go with Conforto. I love Stroman. That's why I'm on the fence. I really love Stroman. I don't think I would like Syndergaard, but I just don't see that happening right now because of the injury.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we added Walker and Carrasco and Lucchesi. Lucchesi doesn't have options. So, you know, you have a little bit more of a fallback for those guys already in-house.
Okay. And same question to you, Jem. Which of the three would you, besides Lindor, is a priority for the Mets to extend?
Yeah, I guess for me it would be a little bit more of a no-brainer. I'd have to go with Conforto on that one.
Okay.
How about you,
all right,
Dale?
Well, me, I think I'm going to have to disagree with both of you guys, because, you know, pitching, the price of pitching is at a premium right now. And I think if you can lock in Thor, you have the chance at, like, getting a discount, you know. Because he's probably – if he does dominate next season when he's back from his injury – you know, he's probably going to be worth a lot. So,
yeah, why wouldn't he?
Huh?
Why wouldn't he? I don't see him.
Yeah, he's
shining
in
an extension. I just don't.
Well,
see why he would
he's
have,
no,
why
I,
he would
I,
do
I,
that.
I agree.
I don't think
he seems like
he's in no rush to ink anything.
Well, he seems like he likes playing in New York. It seems, you know, he's very vocal and interacting with fans, and I think that, like, you know, he really likes being here, and at this point, I mean, his agent would probably advise him not to, but if the possibility is there to extend him, sign him to an extension, right now would be the time to get, you know, the cheapest value. Now, I'm not saying you're going to give him like $10 million, you know, you give him a decent size, thinking about long-term, because when you sign a guy, you're valuing, you know, long term. He's young enough, I think. You give him like a nice 5 or 6 year
like 25
extension
a year.
And you know, you can Trevor Bauer makes 45
but then
40
you're
million
really putting
you know
the Mets
and
at risk.
That's well, that's the thing. It's that because of the market of pitching, just think about, I mean, it's something, I don't know. For me, I think if you can get him right now for cheap, it's the time to do it. His agent will probably not advise him to do that. He'll probably be a free agent. But, you know,
Cornet, do you,
that's just my take on it.
You personally do 25, you're the Mets GM. Would you do $25 million a year on Syndergaard? 6 years, 5 years?
I think right, if you mean right now, I think that's a ton of risk because we have no idea how he will respond to, do you think he, to Tommy
do you think,
John.
Do you think that's something it, and, his agent and him would accept? I think yes. I think they would accept it.
I think they would accept that. I think that at least that's close enough for them to consider it.
Yeah, I mean, with the risk involved, I do think that's a fair AAV. I just don't know if the Mets, with how aggressive they want to be, could be put in that position.
Look, Tommy John surgery, like the recovery has been a lot better than it has been. You know, we have all these medical advances that, you know, you, yes, there's risk there, but I'm not too worried because I believe in all the advances, and based on seeing other guys who've had Tommy John surgery, they're still able to, you know,
true, but
succeed.
But that doesn't exclude one from another, in my honest opinion. We don't know if he loses some velo, and in my honest opinion, Syndergaard's not a pitcher right now that ages well if he loses velocity. Mm. So that's also part of my concern with Noah. Yes, pitching is expensive, so I agree with all those points. But I think if you want to keep Noah Syndergaard, you have to pay up pretty substantially with not knowing what he's capable of right now. At least,
right, and that's the thing. That's why I think right now would be a good time, because I think his agent would also advise him, like, hey, you know, this is a good deal for you now. Both sides know that there's risk to it. I wouldn't say, you know, if you can get him under 25, you get him like, a, you know, 23.5 or something like that. I, you know, more, maybe more top heavy, give him 20, you know, six or whatever later on his contract, but whatever, that's, let's just move on and, you know, wrap the show up. So is there any last words from either of you, gentlemen? I'll start with you.
No, I'm just really excited to be able to watch the game tomorrow. I'm excited to see Sam McWilliams on the hill. I don't know if you were planning on asking any one of us that, Del, but that's something that, you know, just being able to watch a baseball game, to see that baseball field is always special. And I am excited that tomorrow it's going to come to fruition for myself.
Okay, and how about you, Corny? Are you excited to see Sam McWilliams tomorrow? Yeah, I did it. Now go ahead, wrap it up, Corny.
Yeah, I can't. I'm laughing too hard. Let's watch the game. Go Sam McWilliams, and let's get done with this show.
All right. In case you haven't heard, we're all excited about Sam McWilliams tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us, Jem. Corney, you know, it's always great talking baseball with you. And everybody have a nice evening, and let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets.